Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, Internet world. Welcome to The Cross in the Desert, speaking hope and freedom to Iran. I'm your host, Randy L. Noble, and once again, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy life to join me today on my radio program. Today is Thursday, May 19th, 2022, and things have been heating up on the streets in Iran again after freedom fighters have taken to the streets to denounce this horrible, evil regime. I have two sources this morning I want to quote from for information on this uprising. One is from Fox News, and the other is from Lisa Daftaris, the Foreign Desk. Well, protests have been going on for about a week or so as the Iranians are showing their disdain for this regime in Tehran, 43 years worth. Over the weekend, reports said up to five people were killed following a crackdown by authorities. The protests began last week when the government slashed food subsidies on eggs, milk, chicken, and cooking oil, leading to price rises of some 300%. You'll recall back in 2018, some of the same things happened. It was a fuel gas price hike, which ended in the death of 1,500 innocent protests. Since then, though, it began last week, protests have spread to many areas of the country. And so it's much more than just an anti-government rant over the economy. And it's really blossomed into statewide protests. And the protesters show no fear of retribution by the state security services. And they've been heard shouting, "Death to Khamenei, death to Raisi," that is the new president. And of course, he had promised to create all these jobs, lift sanctions, rescue the economy, all of them lies. Usually that's the way it goes. Ned Price, who's the United States government official, says brave Iranian protesters are standing up for their rights. The Iranian people have a right to hold their government accountable. This is what Ned Price goes on to tweet. We support their rights to peaceful assembly and freedom of expression online and offline without fear of violence and reprisal. But this is the same administration that wants to lock horns for another nuclear deal, ensuring that the Iranian government will have nuclear capabilities. Now, Benham Ben Talablu, he's a senior fellow at the Foundation for Defense of Democracies, told Fox News Digital that, quote, the million-dollar question for the Biden administration is this: does it ever plan to act on its promised or professed support for Iranian protesters? When Donald Trump was president, he tweeted in behalf of Iranian protesters. He had their top general and terrorist, Soleimani, put to death. But the Biden administration is the great appeaser, like the Obama administration. They will appease, and they will never stand up for the Iranian people. Now, the Iranian protesters have become more courageous than ever. And it's because they've hit rock bottom. They feel they have absolutely nothing to lose. From the foreign desk, Lisa Daftari writes this incredibly important story. Iran's protesters recall better days under the Shah. They've been pouring out in the street in groves across the country, and it's lasted for more than a week. And yeah, it began as grievances over the price of bread and a cut in state subsidies on food, but it's escalated into a full-steamed political movement that is being met with violent and deadly aggression, as usual, by the Islamic Republic, and they've beefed up security assets to disrupt the gathering of the protesters. Sources inside Iran report to Lisa Daftari that the main chant in Iran protests evoke the name of the late Reza Shah. He's the father of the Shah, who really is a symbol of nationalism. Well, you know, if you listen to my program, over the past four decades, the Iranian opposition to the regime has made its grievances knowing by the colorful and almost always rhyming chants that are heard as protesters march through the streets. The current protests, the passion, the fervor of the demonstrators, you hear them chant death to the supreme leader and death to the president Razi. Experts are pointing out that the Iranian people use these slogans to make their message to the world clear. This is not a protest over the price of bread. This is a call for the removal of the regime. And as the days go on, the people's chants have become increasingly focused on the Pahlavi monarchy, evoking the name of the late Shah, his father Reza Shah, and his exiled son, now living in the United States. Protesters have been heard chanting, "Reza Shah, bless your soul. Without a Shah, no country has no order. What a mistake we made supporting the revolution, and return back to us, Shah of Iran." Iranians inside and outside of Iran fondly remember and recognize the Pahlavis' contributions to Iran. It was under the Pahlavis that Iran made tremendous economic and social progress, only to be undone by the Islamic radical left alliance. Today, the Pahlavis are more popular than ever, especially the son of the Shah. That's why thousands and thousands of Iranians are calling for his return to Iran and the overthrow of the Khamenei dictatorship. Reza Pahlavi, 61 years old, he is finally called by Iranians literally meaning son of the Shah, the oldest son of the last Shah, and currently he resides in Maryland. He is an ardent critic of the current regime, which has replaced his father's rule. Now, two-thirds of the population, they're under the age of 40, and this is why there's such a major attraction to him and a remembrance of what all him and his father accomplished. And as an Iranian who loves her country, the Shah represents 2,500 years of history and culture. But in addition to their historical legacies, hearing the names of the generations of Shah reminds us Iranians of better days filled with comfort, happiness, great strength. That's what Mitra says. She's a political dissident. Reza Shah, may his soul be blessed, was the father of the modern Iran, and we owe the Pahlavi dynasty for building up our country. That's according to Mitra, who's a political dissident. We need to stand with the Iranian protesters. The Biden administration ignores their pleas for help, ignores their human rights. So we need to stand with them. We need to support them. We need to pray for them as the freedom fighters go into the streets and make their cause known, not only to the Islamic regime, which really they ignore them, but they're making their cause known to the world. There's not enough of this on social media. There's not enough of this in the media. We need to continue to report on what's happening in Iran. It is so vital to what is happening and what will happen in the Middle East. Now, speaking about Iran, this morning I want to take us to a story published by Open Doors. It's on my Praying for the Persecuted Church page. It is a story about how Jesus is transforming the life of Iranians every day. And I want to tell you this story. It's a beautiful story entitled Imprisoned, Beaten, Spied On, and Yet These Iranian Believers Still Choose Jesus. Counting the cost of following Jesus in Iran. Ali and Zara are among the thousands of Iranian believers forced to flee their country simply because they follow Jesus. They now live in Turkey, and they still see God's hand at work in their lives, even in the darkest moments. If you were ever to meet Ali and Zara and their two sons, Daniel and Samuel, you wouldn't notice anything remarkable about them. But talk to them for a bit longer, and you start to sense that these four believers who are now living in Turkey aren't your average family. None of them are able to work legally. They need police permission to travel more than a few miles from their home in Turkey, and they don't speak fluent Turkish. When you discover the reason behind their current situation, everything clicks into place. Ali, Zara, Samuel, and Daniel were forced to flee their home in Iran, leaving behind their house, their family, just everything they had ever known, and all because they followed Jesus. Well, Ali didn't grow up as a Christian. Like most Iranians, he was raised in a Muslim family. But he also grew up in a family that was troubled by emotional strife. He says, "My mother's family were all into drugs, crime, fights, prisons, all kinds of trouble." This toxic legacy, of course, impacted Ali, who began using drugs as a teenager. He says, "Drugs and alcohol were really common in my family." And soon, Ali was addicted to heroin, an affliction that would continue even after he married Zara and even after they had their sons. Ali's addiction was really devastating to his family. "My husband was mostly not at home," Zara says, "and was at places where he could take drugs. I was alone in raising my kids because of his drug problem. We lived in poverty." And as the years went by, Zara grew deeply depressed. "I could not keep myself together. I couldn't control my tears. I would just be walking in the streets crying." And she just didn't even want to be around her children because she didn't want to see them. They were so sad. As a deeply religious Muslim, Zara turned to God to try to find answers. "I cried while saying prayers to God, and I used to spend hours complaining to him and ask him, why did this happen to me? But then Jesus changed everything." Ali had reached rock bottom. "One night I was using drugs," Ali says, "and thinking about killing myself. But that night, something happened to Ali. In my dreams," Ali says, "I saw a man from heaven holding out his hands to me, and he was saying, give me your hands if you dare. And when I took his hand, a flame burned me from head to toe," Ali recalls. Ali told Zara about his dream, and the couple went all over the city to the sacred places of Shiite Islam. They wanted to find out who this man was in the dream that he had. And the couple's search led them to a group of Christians who knew Ali was an addict. Why? Because one of the group had been an addict as well. Ali knew his friend's life had changed, but didn't understand what Jesus had to do with it. "He told me that he is a Christian, and he started talking about it. I knew that he would not make something up. We started talking more, and he said, do you want us to pray for you to get free of your addiction?" Well, yeah, even though Ali didn't believe in prayer, he agreed. His friends started praying the Lord's Prayer, and as he did, something remarkable happened to Ali. "The same flame and person from my dream entered my body. Then I realized that Jesus Christ was the man who met me that night. It was then that I gave my heart to Christ. Though at first she was uncomfortable with Ollie's new faith, Zara soon found Jesus as well. God had taken away Ollie's addiction, and because of that miracle, Zara knew there must be some truth to this Jesus. She began searching and soon felt herself called by Jesus too. Zara, Ollie, and their sons, well, they were just overjoyed. Their family had been miraculously healed, and God's goodness was just so apparent. But they are from Iran, and decisions to follow Jesus in Iran are never easy. And you know that. In Iran, when someone becomes a Christian, Ollie says, the family becomes defensive. And he explained, I am seen as defiled, and my life is considered filthy by them. Ollie and Zara knew that this was the reality of their faith decision. When I became a Christian, I said to myself, my family, my country, and everything are behind me. It was a huge step because there was no support anymore. Everyone was opposed to me, and I knew that's because of the path I chose. Zara, who was close to her Muslim family, felt the loss deeply. One night, I was going to my mother's house. When she realized that I was coming over, she didn't allow me in. Eventually, as their faith became more public, more consequences followed. Ollie lost his job, his family's social privileges. Everyone and everything fell away. But their love for Jesus only grew in the midst of the turmoil. They joined the ministry team of a network of underground house churches, and they were excited about joining other believers in worship and prayer. And that's why they were arrested. The Islamic Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps are the branch of the Iranian military that ensures Islamic law is followed. And it was a group of these guards that showed up at a meeting of the church network that Ali and Zara belonged to. They arrested and interrogated everyone at the meeting. The authorities discovered that Ali and Zara, who happened to not be at that meeting at the time of the arrest, they were also part of the church network. And so they began to look for them. Zara was at a church meeting with Ali when they found her. We saw them coming toward the home. Then we saw them coming in from the window. First they blindfolded us. Then they put us in a car and drove us somewhere and put us in different rooms and started interrogating us. Then they called Ali with my phone and said, quote, your wife had an accident. Come to the hospital. Now, Ali remembers the day he got that call. He phoned a friend who worked at the hospital who told him, Zara's not here. Ali soon realized what was happening and went to the hospital to face the authorities. On the way, Ali said, I started deleting phone numbers from my phone to keep other believers' identities safe. When I got there, agents handcuffed and blindfolded me, put a bag over my head, and threw me in the car. It was then that I realized Zara was in the car, too. They started driving. They took Zara away, and I didn't know where they had taken her. Then they took me to a jail cell with no lights, no toilet, no blanket. And once in prison, the couple lived in separate cells that endured days of interrogation. They held me in solitary confinement in a tiny room with no lights or windows, Zara says. There wasn't any electricity. There was no pillow or blanket or bed. Late at night, they would take me upstairs for interrogation. I did not answer a single question. He would say, you are filthy. You are pulling others in your filth. This is not your country. If it was, you would not do this, and you'd better die. Ali endured similar treatment. Their goal was to identify underground churches, and they knew that we were active in ministry and knew a lot of people. They even said, cooperate with us. You can have your church without any interference. For Ali, the abuse was not only verbal and psychological. During the interrogation, he was beaten a lot. At one point, they sat me up on a chair and tied both my hands to the guard and to the chair. Do you know where you are sitting? I am blindfolded. I don't know. You are on an electric chair. Eventually, after all of this, Ali and Zara were released. but the situation didn't get any easier. Being out of prison didn't make their lives better, far from it. And that seemed to be the plan of Iranian authorities. When I came out of prison, I told myself, I'll start building again. Ali said that, but I got fired from every job that I had. After a week, the authorities would just send a letter and ask my employers, let me go. My sons weren't allowed to go to school each day. There was a chance of me not coming back. Each day was suffering and torture. The couple endured this for 2 years after their arrest, constantly harassed. The authorities themselves said that it is better for you to leave the country. You have no place here. My husband said that we have no place here. We have to go, Zahr says. And so the family made the impossibly difficult decision to leave Iran. It is really painful to leave your country like this, Ali says. If there was a way, we would have been in Iran now. We had two choices, stay and suffer, especially our children, or to leave and reach a relative peace. And as they look back, Ali and Zahra still see God's hand at work in their lives, even in the darkest moments. When you are inside the jail, you know you are no longer in control, Zahra says. No one can help you. And while in prison, I thought to myself, there are people who love me and cry for my pain and suffering, and most importantly, pray for me, because without God's power, you cannot tolerate prison and keep going. It doesn't matter where we are from, Ali adds. The only thing that matters is that we are part of the same body. When we were in solitary confinement, the only thing that strengthened us was prayer. Nothing else would work. Only God can go to those dark places and dungeons and be strength for his children. They have found a more peaceful way of living. Their new country doesn't mean life is easy or even comfortable. Ali, Zahra, Daniel, and Samuel really did lose everything for Jesus. Would they still choose faith, knowing everything they'd given up? The person interrogating me asked the same question. Zahra says, I said, yes, even after everything they've been through. All they have given up, the hope of Jesus shines through this family. I want you to know that they understand the cost of following Jesus in Iran. They understand the words of Jesus who said, if you want to follow me, you have to be willing to deny yourself and take up your cross daily. They understand the cost. I'm going to be back in just a minute after this song from Elevation Worship. Let's listen.
In majesty.
Powerful worship music from Elevation Worship, Resurrecting. This morning on the Cross in the Desert, we have been talking about the incredibly courageous freedom fighters of Iran, the protests all over Iran, not just about the economy, not just about the struggle, but about the removal of this evil regime. These young protesters know the beauty and the life their parents have told them about, what life was like under the Shah, and they want the Shah to return. And, of course, that just enrages the Revolutionary Guard and the Iranian regime there. Please keep them in your prayers. Also this morning, the incredible story I shared with you from Open Doors, Ali and Zara, following Jesus in Iran. No matter what the cost, it's amazing what the gospel is doing in Iran. I want to thank you all for listening today on the Cross in the Desert. Have a safe and wonderful weekend. I will see you again on Monday on the Cross in the Desert. God bless you. Thank you.